John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Greek voters indicated a left turn in the most recent parliamentary elections, putting the Syriza coalition into power, fueled by an anti-austerity sentiment. What this means for the Eurozone, the Greek economy, and the rest of the world remains to be seen. This hour we'll get two perspectives on Greece, starting with a reporter who has spent extensive time there and can talk with some authority about what's been going on. We'll also talk with an economist about the impact of possible Greek debt scenarios on the global economy. My first guest is Barnaby Phillips, a journalist with more than 25 years of experience, most of it in Europe, and an award-winning reporter for Al Jazeera, who has covered the Greek economic crisis. Barnaby Phillips, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So give us some background on what led up to the results in the most recent Greek parliamentary elections. What was going on in the electorate?
Well, the background is a severe economic crisis that has been going on in Greece for 5 years, and really akin to something like the Great Depression, which the United States suffered in the 1930s. That's the parallel for the Greek people. The economy, GDP, has contracted during that time by one quarter, by 25%. Unemployment stands at 25%. Unemployment amongst young people in their early 20s stands at over 50%. And so the vote for Syriza, the far-left party, was in large part a vote of, if you like, despair, of anger, of rejection of the austerity policies which are associated with what's in Greece is called the Troika, which means the European Union, the IMF, and the European Central Bank, the outside creditors who have lent Greece money since 2010, in return for which they have imposed, if you like, very steep austerity policies, cuts in government spending, and so on. And this was a rejection of that route that Greece has been on for five difficult years.
So what's it been like for the average Greek citizen under these austerity measures? Unemployment is high, particularly youth unemployment. What kind of work are people doing?
Well, people are getting by as best as they can. I mean, what you've seen is, for example, the health service under severe strain. You've seen an awful lot of emigration of the best and brightest and the youngest Greeks, and that's so sad. Across southern Europe, it's a very difficult time now for young people. Also in countries like Spain and Italy, you'll find similar, not quite as bad, unemployment levels. So many bright, young, ambitious Greeks, for example, simply don't feel that they have a future in the country. Many have left to more prosperous countries in the European Union, like Germany, like Great Britain, and those with family ties have gone further afield to Australia or the United States and so on. For people who are older and perhaps, more vulnerable, less well-educated, pensioners in particular, it's been a very difficult time. Pensioners might have seen, for example, their monthly pension cut from something like 700 euros, which is about $1,000, maybe cut by a third or so, down to 500 euros, which is, $600 or $700. So people are scraping by. Of course, in the summer, Greece still has tourism. It's an immensely beautiful and popular country for tourists to come, particularly from northern Europe, from Scandinavia and Germany. And that gives a boost in the summer months, because, of course, it's a lovely, warm, wonderful place to be in the summer months, and many tourists visited in 2014. Economists will tell you, or some economists believe, that Greece's problem is that it is trapped in the Eurozone. It can't, it has an overvalued currency, and if it left the Eurozone, that would be a very traumatic period, but it might recover, and it might be able to reap some comparative advantage. Tourism, for example, would be much cheaper than it is now, and maybe even more people would visit Greece. But that's something that the Greek people are very skeptical of, because although they voted overwhelmingly to reject austerity, It's very clear that a majority of Greeks absolutely want to stay in the single currency. They want to stay in the euro, and they are very, very frightened by the idea of leaving the euro.
The election itself, though, the Syriza party, it did not capture an absolute majority in parliament, and so they had to make a coalition in order to get a majority. Who did they make that coalition with, and what do we know about them?
They went into coalition with a party who are called the Independent Greeks, who are rather paradoxically definitely on the right of Greek politics. And on the face of it, it's hard to see how much they have in common with Syriza, except for a dislike of austerity and a sense that Greece, a mutually shared sense that Greece was being bullied from abroad, and in particular, perhaps, from Germany and by the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who's now the most important politician in Europe. And so that united them. But on many other issues, the independent Greeks are far to the right. But Greece is a peculiar country, and there are some, I suppose, nationalistic issues, you might say, where the far left and the far right tend to converge. They often share, for example, a suspicion of the United States and of American motives, and this dates back to the Civil War years and the junta years, and they often might have a shared sympathy for Russia or be more pro-Russian than you might think. There's an Orthodox religion in common, of course, and that can tend to unite far left and far right. And so one of the first things which this new coalition government did was it suggested that it wasn't so happy with the course of EU sanctions against Russia over Russia's apparent involvement in the war in eastern Ukraine. And that has worried governments, certainly across Western Europe, and added, if you like, a geopolitical element to Greece's ever-worsening, everlasting economic problems.
Who are some of the other political players in Greece, and how are they responding to what happened in the election?
Well, I think they're all rather sort of just picking up the pieces, but the party that had been leading the previous coalition in power, that they're called New Democracy, and they're a centre-right party, a sort of conventional centre-right party. And they, along with the old Socialist Party of PASOK, which probably your listeners will have heard of in the 80s and 90s, led by the Papandreou family, PASOK has really been obliterated. It's really, really suffered during Greece's economic crisis. And it really just scraped into parliament with some 4% of the vote. New Democracy is still there. They got over 20% of the vote. And they offer, if you like, the conventional opposition to Syriza. They had pushed through many of the austerity policies, but now, like Syriza, and I think sensing where the Greek electorate are feeling and what the Greek electorate believes, they too believe that Greece needs a break, if you like, that there has to be more social spending, debts have to be forgiven. I mean, one of the paradoxes of Greece is that while it's gone through this absolutely rigorous austerity period in the last 5 years and has brought, for example, budgets right under control. It's gone from very big deficits to surpluses, mainly as a result of the economy, frankly, having contracted so much and government spending having been cut so much. At the same time, without wanting to get too economical and too sort of wonkish about it, the debt burden as a whole, relative to the size of Greece's GDP, just keeps on going up and up. It is now, I think, about 175% the debt burden relative to the GDP. And so I think many European economists, and not just Syriza, not just on the left, see that debt burden as unsustainable. There's just no way Greece is going to be able to pay it back. And then the question is, how does Greece get out of this situation?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems like a sort of a loop, and in some ways, the more successful, and again, this depends on your view of what success means, that austerity is, the less money the Greek government has to work with to pay its debts.
Yes, that's certainly what the new government would argue. The problem is that they have borrowed an awful lot of money, and they now have to convince that their creditors, the European Central Bank, the IMF, and the European Union, that the total bailout funds that Greece has received since 2010 amount to 240, I think, billion euros. That's over $300 billion. Countries like Portugal and Ireland have gone through similar programs and have emerged through similar programs. Their governments would look sort of pretty foolish, I suppose, in front of their own electorates if the Europeans now cut Greece some slack, if you like, and allowed Greece, more lenient terms, if you like. Angela Merkel, the dominant political figure, she has to be very cognizant of what German taxpayers think about where their money has gone. And that's why we're entering a period where we're going to see some very tense and difficult negotiations between Greece and those big European institutions. And incidentally, time is of the essence, because many economists feel that Greece, you know, has enough money to stagger on for a couple of months at most. But it needs to pay back money. Bills are coming up, loans due to be paid back to the IMF and the European Central Bank. And at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty in the Greek banking sector. A lot of money is leaving Greek banks. People are taking their money elsewhere because they're frightened, just as they did back in 2012, when it really did look as if Greece was on the verge of leaving the Eurozone. And if Greek banks carry on being drained of their funds, they run into what's known as a liquidity crisis, and then they would have to go to the European Central Bank and ask for permission to borrow more money, essentially, to print more money. And if the European Central Bank says no, well, that's when things could spiral out of control very quickly, and potentially Greece would default.
800-486-8655 is the number to use to join our discussion here on the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're talking about the situation in Greece following an election that saw a change in who's in charge of the Greek government, a move to the left, a move against austerity. And we're just watching this play out. We will be talking about this from a couple of different perspectives. Right now, Barnaby Phillips is with me, a journalist with Al Jazeera, who has covered the Greek economic crisis and has been there for a number of years and knows what's going on there. And then later on in the program, we'll bring in an economist, and we'll probably get all wonky, but this is public radio, so I think that's allowed. 800-486-8655, talk@wpr.org is the email address. You can also join the discussion on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, and the same on Twitter. So let's talk about, You mentioned that time is of the essence. Certainly from the economic sense, that time is of the essence. How much wiggle room do you think does Mr. Tsipras have with the electorate? How much time does he have to make things right? How patient are Greek voters likely to be?
Well, I think that's a difficult question to answer. I think he has to deliver some of the promises he made during the election campaign. And just to explain to your viewers, to your listeners, I'm sorry, he's talking about, for example, rehiring in the Greek public sector. Some of the people have been laid off during austerity. He's talking about raising the minimum wage again, which had been cut right back from, you know, right down to 500 euros a month. He wants to increase it, I think, by 20%. He's talking about reconnecting thousands of poor Greeks to electricity, their homes. People have been cut off because they couldn't pay their bills. And so, you know, certainly he has to do some of these things if people in Greece are going to keep faith with him. I think at the same time, some of the policies he's proposing would be anathema to the countries and institutions which have lent Greece money. But there is one glimmer of hope, if you like, which is that both Mr. Tsipras and the main European institutions and the IMF don't want Greece to be kicked out of the Eurozone, which is the worst-case scenario, the train crash, if you like. Both of them realize that would be disastrous. It would be disastrous for Greece, It would lead to probably to hyperinflation, to a very uncertain future under, I suppose, they'd go back to an old currency known as the drachma. It would be certainly turmoil in the Greek banking sector. Some economists believe that Greece's GDP really could shrink by as much as 20%, and it would go through a very turbulent period. But it would also be a disaster for Europe because, as you know, Europe has struggled with this idea of unity. And there is no, you know, there is no precedent of a country joining the euro and then leaving. Would it be able to survive inside the European Union after that? And Greece has become, well, it's certainly the extremes in Greek politics have come out in recent years. Because don't forget that the party that came third, which I haven't mentioned yet, is a party known as Golden Dawn. Now, Golden Dawn are neo-Nazis. They're pretty a pretty extreme far-right nationalist group. They've been associated with all sorts of violence on the streets in Athens, attacks on immigrants and people of color. It's a testimony, I suppose, to the turmoil in Greek society that 500,000 people are prepared to vote for them. And no one wants to see that kind of social breakdown accelerate further in a European country in the 21st century.
We have a comment from Andrew in Boscobel. Actually, it was a question. Why is there such a great aversion to leaving the euro? Why are the Germans so intent on keeping Greece in the eurozone?
Well, I suppose that's a very good question. And, of course, there are economists who believe that in the long run, Greece would be better off outside of the eurozone. That, yes, it would go through a period of trauma, an economic contraction, but exchange rates would level out and Greece would be able to produce at a cheaper rate what it's good at. But I think people realize that the turmoil that it would go through in the meantime would be very severe. Perhaps the real answer to that is a general recognition that Greece should never have joined the euro, that it was a big mistake that was made back a decade ago, that many of the figures that Greece produced at the time were not convincing, but they were simply glossed over. There was a bigger European project at stake, and that was bringing in countries in southern Europe, and in particular Italy, a much more important political country, politically, historically, into the European project. And there, I suppose, is the essence of the answer to Andrew's question, that the euro is in many ways a political project, not an economic project. And during this recession, the contradictions within the eurozone have caught up with the single currency and are putting it under great strain. But for a country like Germany to admit this and to preside over the breaking up of the eurozone, well, in some ways it would be, without wanting to be too dramatic about it, it would be the end of the post-1945 settlement in Europe that has brought this continent peace, for the large part, through, what, 7 decades now. And it would put Europe into a much less stable future. But at the same time, you have to remember that Syriza's victory was cheered on by parties across Europe who are opposed to austerity, but also parties who are opposed to the euro. So not just parties like Podemos, a new left-wing party in Spain, but also what we're calling right-wing insurgent parties, parties like the Front National, the National Front in France, parties like UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party here in the UK. All of these are opposed to the euro, and if they were to gain power, Europe would look very, very different politically, and that is something that rattles the European political establishment.
Let's take a call from Camille in New Berlin. Camille, thanks for joining the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wondered how countries like Spain and Greece are very popular with retirees from Northern Europe, fare when they have to pay for the medical care of the retirees down there. Their young people are going north for jobs, they don't require that much medical care, yet these countries have to pay for the medical care under these agreements. It's akin to Florida and Arizona having to pay for all of their retirees without any Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement.
Well, that's a good question, and it gets to the essence of what the European project is about. If we really are a union, we share our social welfare systems. But I think in practical terms, a lot of British pensioners who I know who are in Greece, yes, they are entitled to the Greek public health system, but they pretty quickly realize that the British public health system was far better. And while there are many good reasons to go to Greece, it's you know, the weather's great, the food's great, property's cheap if you're coming from England, healthcare is substantially inferior. I can't speak so much about Spain, but certainly the Greek public health system was notorious long before this economic crisis. There is a tradition in Greece in the public health system of corruption. It's known as the Fakalakia, which means the little brown envelope. And many Greeks will tell you, you know, long before things got really bad in the last 5 years, that it was often very, very difficult to get a doctor to give you an operation. You'd wait in a long queue. But if you provided a little brown envelope, things would suddenly happen much quicker. So that a lot of British pensioners have found that very, very difficult in Greece, coming to terms with that.
Camille, thanks so much for that question. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. 800-486-8655. We're talking about the situation in Greece this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen this week. Kathleen, by the way, will be back next week. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org, or find the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and Twitter and leave your comment or question there. My guest for the moment is Barnaby Phillips, a journalist with more than 25 years of experience, most of it in Europe, an award-winning reporter for Al Jazeera who has covered the Greek economic crisis and spent quite a bit of time there. You touched on this a bit earlier, but I want to bring this up again because it certainly seems to be something that is on the minds of people in the Eurozone, because austerity hasn't just been a Greek issue. I mean, every country in the Eurozone has gone through this in one form or another, maybe some less than others. And does this election in Greece, like the one in the election that happened in France, is this a signal that Europe is ready to take a turn back to the left?
Perhaps not necessarily back to the left, but it is a signal that the consensus politics and consensus economic direction that has dominated the continent over the last few years during the recession is breaking and is under great strain. And you're right. That's why this election and its result reverberated right across Europe. I mean, I was with the crowds who were celebrating in the center of Athens at midnight when the results came out. And yeah, it was quite extraordinary, because I was looking for a Greek person to interview, and I'd find a group of Spanish leftists and Italians and British people and Danes and Germans. All these different groups had traveled to Greece to witness what they thought was history. And undoubtedly, this was watched very closely in countries like Italy and Spain and Portugal, France, even the United Kingdom, of course, which is outside the Eurozone, but which is very closely connected with it, were watching very closely. And then you have countries like Germany, and that's the most powerful one, but also countries like Finland and Austria, perhaps in particular in Northern Europe, who have been, I suppose, the architects of the austerity policy, and who want to see what they would see as Southern Europe profligate spending being cut right back. They want to see much improved tax collection and so on. And they're very worried by this election result. And you've got to keep things in perspective. Greece is a very small country within the Eurozone. I think its economy only contributes about 3% of the entire GDP of the Eurozone. But its political influence now, if you like, as a result of its economic problems, is out of all proportion to just what a small country it is.
800-486-8655 is the number to call to join our discussion. You mentioned tax collection. From what I've read, the Greeks have been notoriously bad at collecting taxes. What can they do differently?
They've been terrible at collecting taxes, and there's a long tradition in Greece and Greeks will tell you that it dates back to the 400 years that they were under Ottoman rule of not paying taxes. And wealthy Greeks are very skilled at not paying taxes. They're very skilled at getting their money out of the country and buying nice houses in London, or buying yachts and other expensive things, and buying off the tax man. And I think that is somewhere where Syriza will find actually difficulty in Greece, but they may find support in the rest of Europe. Not everything Syriza wants to do will horrify Angela Merkel. When Syriza says that it wants to break up the oligarchs and really stamp down on corruption and really improve tax collection and find money that wealthy Greeks have been hiding, well, that is actually somewhere where the Germans, the Austrians, the Finns will be going, yes, we'd really like to see you do that. Because there's a feeling in Greece that despite 4 or 5 years of austerity, the wealthiest people have got off relatively easy, that successive governments have opted for the easy option. They've taken money at source of poor pensioners, of poor unemployed people, of poor civil servants, and they've avoided the politically awkward reforms of going after really powerful people. So if Syriza can do that, they will win some friends across Europe, and that might buy them some breathing time, if you like, and earn them some credit all round. But it will be very difficult. For example, the man who, under the previous government, was brought in to try and improve tax collection, well, he tried his best. We spoke to him, and he said, you know, he was receiving death threats. He was receiving calls telling him his legs would be broken, and he had to stop what he was doing. So in the end, he realized he did not have the support of his political masters in the previous government, and he eventually gave up. And that's been the pattern of Greek efforts to collect taxes for many decades now.
Well, one quick question, and then we need to let you go and move on to our next guest. But Paul writes in and says, who profited from the euro integration, and where has that money, value, and ownership gone now?
Well, many people in southern Europe believe that the country that has dominated the eurozone, Germany, has also profited the most economically as well, that German exports have found a huge market across the eurozone, and that it has helped German industry to the detriment, if you like, of industries in southern Europe. But the other answer to that question, who has profited, I think it comes back to what I was saying earlier. The euro is as much a political project as it is an economic project. It's meant to bind the people of the European Union together in a political union. That is its raison d'etre, as much as it's meant to make us all wealthier. And yet, paradoxically, at this time of great strain, you could argue that it's actually increasing antipathy between countries in southern and northern Europe, doing the exact opposite of what it was meant to do.
Barnaby Phillips, thank you for spending this time with us today. I really appreciate your insights as somebody who's been to Greece and talked to people there and has a better idea, certainly, than any of us do here in America about what's going on there. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, my pleasure, and I hope I've been able to shed some light on a very complex issue.
Yeah, well, it is complex, but I think we have a little better picture of what's going on there. Thank you again. Barnaby Phillips is a reporter for Al Jazeera. He's covered the Greek economic crisis. He's been a journalist for more than 25 years, and we appreciate his being willing to come on and talk with us today on the Kathleen Dunn program. In just a moment, we'll welcome Paul Kirkgaard, who is an economist, and we'll talk, maybe we might even get a little wonky. I think we could risk it here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'll talk some of the specifics about the Greek debt situation and how it might bleed over into the rest of the global economy and what the dangers are there, where maybe some of the landmines economically might be. We'll take a little break and we'll come back. You're certainly welcome to join the discussion at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, as always, is talk@WPR.org, and you can find the Kathleen Dunn Show on social media as well. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Greece today on the Kathleen Dunn Show. Their recent election tilted the government a little bit to the left and sent some shockwaves through the Eurozone. My next guest is Jacob Kirkgaard, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Mr. Kirkgaard, thanks for joining me on the Kathleen Dunn Show today.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
And I don't hear the guest.
Hello? Well, I certainly hear you.
Okay, clearly we have a technical issue here. Hopefully that gets resolved quickly. Not sure why I'm not hearing the guest, but I'm not hearing him. We're talking about the situation with the Greek election, the Greek economy, the Greek debt. It's been a major thorn in the side of the Eurozone, and we're talking about that today. And Mr. Kirkgaard, are you with me?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Thank you.
Okay, now we've got you. All right, great. Well, you know, as a famous person once said, the fancier they make the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drains. Talk a little bit. Can you describe the situation regarding the Greek debt as it stands today, just so we get an overview?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically, Greece is a country that has an enormous public debt. It's about 175% of GDP, which in a comparison is roughly twice or slightly more than twice the level here in the United States, which has led many to believe that this debt is actually unsustainable and that you need to restructure it. There are other people who would argue that, well, actually, this debt is not unsustainable because it's not owned by sort of private investors or, you know, public pension funds or things like that. It's actually owned overwhelmingly by other euro area governments, the governments in Germany, France, Italy, etc. And these governments charge the Greek government a very low interest rate for this debt. So actually, the cost of servicing Greece's very high debt as a share of GDP in Greece is actually quite low. It's only about 2% of GDP right now. So you could actually argue, and some do, that Greece doesn't actually have a financing problem. It has a large debt, but it doesn't have a financial problem. And the real political problem that you have in Greece is that the population and also the new government that was recently elected seems unwilling to accept the conditions for all the cheap loans that they have been receiving from their neighboring euro area countries and the IMF. Including things like the austerity, the cutbacks, and the reforms of labor markets and pension systems that the country has been through the last 5 years since the crisis hit.
Well, there would be those who would say that one of the reasons that they aren't willing to continue with the austerity is that it hasn't worked. A number of economists are saying, hey, you know, you really need to let up on them a little bit because this isn't going to produce more economic activity the worse we make the conditions there in Greece. So certainly they've got, what, 28% unemployment, and amongst youth it's as high as 60%?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Greece, since 2010, has gone through, you know, the equivalent of a great recession or a great depression, meaning they've lost about 25% of their economic output and have these very high levels of unemployment that you mentioned. The question, however, is to what extent is that related to the cutbacks that you saw in public expenditure, and to what extent is this related to other issues in the Greek economy, corruption, the lack of competitiveness of Greek firms, etc. And I guess I come down and say that, well, look, there's absolutely no doubt that the significant cutbacks in public expenditures that Greece has gone through since 2010 have been bad for growth. No doubt about it, and is partly to blame for the high levels of unemployment and social stress that you've seen in society. But at the same time, I think that actually probably a larger share of the blame for this catastrophic economic or recent economic developments in Greece is actually attributable to the structural features or the structural pathologies of the Greek economy, namely that when the crisis hit, this was an economy that had a completely unsustainable pension system. It had very high levels of corruption, as you talked about in the previous segment. It had a very large number of firms that were fundamentally uncompetitive. And therefore, in some ways, when it was then discovered in 2010 that the Greek government had actually lied about its own accounts, that actually what looked to have been a public deficit of about 3% of GDP was actually in reality 15% of GDP, people and investors and others simply lost faith in more broadly in the Greek government and Greek society, and they stopped lending, therefore, to the country, which meant that, significant cutbacks in public expenditures were inevitable. And they weren't something that was dictated or imposed upon Greece by Germany or other euro-area countries. They were fundamentally a function of the fact that you had a budget deficit of 15% and no one was willing to lend to you.
We have an email from Derek who writes, in reality, the Greek economy has already defaulted in the sense that without outside subsidies, things would collapse entirely. As it is, outside subsidies have gone largely to the Greek creditors, and Greece is far from alone as numerous other Western industrialized countries are basically in the same position. That's one of the things I've been reading, is that a lot of the money coming in just goes to the creditors. It never really reaches the parts of Greece where it could do some good.
Well, there's no doubt that what has happened since 2010 is that you've had several things take place. One is that the privately held debt, held by banks and investors and et cetera from around the world, was restructured in 2012 and actually written down by about 50%. At the same time, the international community, the neighboring euro area countries, the IMF and others, have been supporting Greece and essentially has therefore allowed that a very large number of private creditors from around the world, but mostly from the euro area, have essentially been able to exit have seen their Greek debt paid off by these new international loans that the Greek government has taken on. So it's certainly true that most of the money that has been lent to Greece as part of this financial assistance has been a sort of channeled back and repaying other creditors, many of which were, from the same European countries that actually gave the official loans. But I think we always need to keep in mind here, what is the actual counterfactual? What would have happened in Greece if this had not taken place? And there, I think it's important to keep in mind that Greece, as I said earlier, in 2010, had a budget deficit of 15% of GDP. And up until quite recently, namely in 2013, 2014, had what's called a primary deficit, which means that even if you, when you take away the cost of all the, of servicing the debt, all the interest money that the Greek government has to pay, it still had a deficit, which means that if there had been no international assistance to Greece, and if there had therefore been none of these lending to Greece that was then funneled back to investors, the situation would actually have been even worse, and the Greek government would have had to impose even more severe cutbacks on public expenditure. So in some ways, this is not certainly an optimal outcome, and it may look strange to some that you see most of these loans going back, being paid back to creditors. But the alternative, as I said, would have been even worse.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Mr. Kirkgaard, I'd like you to talk a little bit about what the risk is to the global economy if things go completely sideways with Greece, worst-case scenario, that kind of thing. What would be the effect, not just on the Eurozone, but how that might affect the rest of the world economy? And we still would like to hear from you, listeners. What's your take on this? You have questions? Some great emails today. I'd really like to see those as well. Talk at WPR.org. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Program on Facebook and on Twitter. But this is a call-in show, so give us a call at 800-486-8655. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking with Greece, with Paul Kirkgaard, and with you at 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the situation in Greece and what it might mean for the rest of the world as well, because it's not just the Greeks that are affected when something like this happens. There are certainly ramifications. The Greek debt is held in a number of different countries, as has been pointed out. My guest in this segment of the program is Jacob Kirkgaard, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. So what happens, Mr. Kirkgaard, if, worst-case scenario, Greece just says, look, we're not paying any of you people back, go away?
Well, the first thing that happens in such a scenario is actually that the Greek economy collapses. Because what will happen is that all the Greek banks that right now essentially rely on liquidity from the European Central Bank, they will lose that liquidity and essentially go bankrupt. So you're going to have runs on the banks in Greece. You're going to have significant shortages of cash. And for that reason, you're going to have businesses having to close, et cetera. So this idea that, you know, it's in Greece's own interest to default on its debt, to basically just sort of say, hey, you know, we're not paying. And somehow that's going to lead the Greeks being better off than they are today is, in my opinion, a myth. Because the reality is that if the Greeks do this, they will be far worse off than they are today. So the likelihood of this worst-case scenario happening is therefore, in my opinion, fortunately, quite low.
Let's take some calls. Richard in Madison. Richard, hello. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for the program. I have a question. When the EU was set up, did it have a federal, you know, what we call the Federal Reserve System, so that, you know, like what's happening with our country, 2,800, you know, 2008, we had stock market crash, the Fed is, you know, printing money or buying bonds. Isn't there some kind of instrument in the EU that's comparable to our Federal Reserve System?
Mr. Kirkgaard, is there anything like the Federal Reserve there? I think not.
Well, not in the EU as a whole, but certainly in the euro area, which is 19 of the 28 members of the European Union, including Greece, there is the European Central Bank, which in many ways functions exactly like the Federal Reserve. It's a central bank. It provides liquidity to banks, et cetera. It has been lowering interest rates since the beginning of the crisis. They are currently basically zero in the euro area, like they are here in the United States. But one major difference is that whereas the Federal Reserve, of course, began its quantitative easing program and bond purchases back in late 2008, 2009, during the height of the crisis, this is something that has actually only just begun in the euro area. They actually only a few weeks ago announced that beginning of March this year, the European Central Bank is going to be buying $60 billion worth of assets, predominantly government bonds, for the next 18 months or so. So in that sense, there are institutions that are completely similar and operates in the same way as the Federal Reserve System. They have just not, for a long list of political reasons, been active nearly as rapidly as we have seen it here in the United States.
Thanks for that call. Let's go quickly to Ralph in Little Suamico. Ralph, thanks for joining us. Ralph, are you there? No, I think we lost Ralph. Let's go to Ben in Madison then. Ben, thank you for being here today. Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious to hear what your guest thinks about similar political movements like Podemos in Spain, and whether he thinks we could see Greece as just the tipping point, and other countries who follow suit with their votes. Thank you.
I actually think that the likelihood of Greece being a bellwether or a canary in the coal mine for other European countries is quite low. And the reason for that is that the economic situation in Greece is actually far worse than in any of the other countries in the euro area, including Spain, even though, you know, unemployment levels are also quite high in Spain. So I think we should also keep in mind that a lot of people have said that, you know, Syriza, this left-wing party, recently won the election in Greece, and there's an election in Spain later this year, and Podemos is leading the opinion polls, at least some of the polls. So they're predicting a similar situation. But I think we should keep in mind that the Spanish elections are only going to be held in December, meaning, you know, at the end of the year. And the reality for Greece and the new government, the new Syriza government, is that they are going to have to face up to the fact that they're going to run out of money no later than June this year, at which point they will have to have a deal with the other euro area countries, which almost certainly will entail that they would have to give up on many of their election promises for more spending and rollback of structural reforms and things like that. Or if they refuse to cut a deal, you're going to have a very, very severe renewed economic crisis in Greece. And therefore, it will be, you know, with those images in front of them, that either you have a radical party cutting a deal and shifting to the center, or you'll have a new severe economic crisis in Greece. It'll be with those pictures that voters in Spain and elsewhere would go to the polls later this year. And I don't think, therefore, in light of that, that the situation in Greece is going to be such an appealing prospect for voters elsewhere in the euro area.
We're about out of time, and so I don't think I want to introduce any new topics here, but I just wanted to say thank you for helping to bring some clarity to an incredibly complex issue. Most of us really don't know a lot about what's going on there, and I really appreciate you coming on today and explaining some of it to us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thanks much to Jacob Kirkgaard, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, for being on the Kathleen Dunn Show this afternoon and helping to figure out some of the economics of this Greek debt situation. Barnaby Phillips was also with us earlier. Scott Myers did an outstanding job of producing this afternoon's program. KP Whaley and Lisa Nalbandian did their usual fine work, also behind the scenes as producers as well. And I'm very thankful for them. Coming up, more of the Kathleen Dunn program here on the Ideas Network. We're going to be talking about the purpose of higher education. A lot of conversations about that on Facebook already. We'll get those Facebook comments in and your calls next hour as the Kathleen Dunn Show continues. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR.